Your Honors, may it please the court, my name is Doug Ruge. I represent the appellant, which is Berkshire Hathaway Home Services and Bastyr Real Estate. Quite a mouthful. I suppose there's two ways of looking at this case. One is whether the subsequent independent contractor agreement superseded the prior independent contractor agreement, and the other is if it did, then how do you interpret the commission agreement vis-a-vis the second independent contractor agreement? So I think those are the two overarching issues in this case. As I've stated, I don't believe that the second independent contractor agreement superseded the first. District court and opposing counsel seems to argue that on its face that the independent contractor agreement, the second one, superseded the first. The only evidence we have as to the intent of the parties is the affidavit of Scott Vogt, the executive at Berkshire Hathaway and previously at CBS Home. And their intent was that as a result of the merger of the two companies that the second contract did not supersede the first. That's the only evidence of the intent of the parties. There's no evidence by Aulis that he intended the second to supersede the first. So the only evidence of the intent of the parties is the affidavit of Scott Vogt. Now, I'll concede that there is some case law out there that says that it doesn't matter what the intent is. If it appears from the face of the documents that the one was supposed to supersede the second, you only have to look at the documents. You don't look at the intent of the parties. Okay? But I don't think that's clear from these two documents. And if you look at York, where you have two basically complete contracts with differing provisions, some similar, but some differing provisions, I think under the standard of York, you can apply, take the position that provisions of the two contracts are read together. And if that's the case, then, and if York applies, then the second independent contractor agreement does not supersede the first.
In New York, were the two contracts among the same parties?
I believe so, but it's been a while since I've read it.
So in this case, the second agreement, isn't the party ambassador, and he's required to be an exclusive agent for ambassador, whereas the first one, it's with CBS Home?
Now, that's an interesting question, because the two companies merged. So they merged together. So are they the same under the standard of York? If York involved the same parties, and CBS Home merges into Berkshire Hathaway Ambassador, are they the same parties? I don't know. I don't know how that affects the analysis under York, to be honest with you, Your Honor.
Well, the evidence that you put in, there was a merger of Home and Ambassador, correct?
Yes.
And Ambassador was the survivor of that, the surviving entity?
By name.
Okay. Yeah. And then the parties were encouraged to sign the subsequent agreement after that merger, correct?
Correct.
And then Ambassador was going to be he was going to serve as the exclusive agent for Ambassador after that, right?
Right. They would operate under the name Ambassador, correct? So you have this issue of whether the subsequent supersedes the first. If it doesn't, then you can incorporate provisions of the CBS Home contract, the ability to charge up to 30% for pending transactions, in other words, closing out the pending transactions of the agent. Brokerage contracts are specific to the broker, not the departing agent, so the brokerage has to close them out unless there's a provision for assignment of them. So that provision would survive, I think, under the standard of York. And also there's the ability to offset fees owed against commissions under the CBS Home contract. So that's the first issue there, is the superseding issue. If it does supersede, you still have contract interpretation of the second independent contractor agreement against the commission agreement. You have a unique situation here where you have this first independent contractor agreement in 2006, and then October you have a commission agreement entered into with the new, if you want to call it the new brokerage, and then later the next month you have the second independent contractor agreement entered into, which purports to incorporate the commission agreement that was entered into in October. So you have a unique timeline here, but I think it's clear that the independent contractor agreement and the commission agreement are one contract. You know, the independent contractor agreement incorporates the commission agreement. Fundamental principles of contract interpretation, you know, you have to interpret the contract reasonably, as reasonable persons would interpret them, and you have to try to give meaning to all provisions of the contract. So if you read the commission agreement and the independent contractor agreement as one contract, I think you have to try to give meaning to the provisions of the commission agreement. The commission agreement specifically provides that, okay, we're going to give you some freebies for a period of time. You get $5,000 credit towards advertising, other expenses. You don't have to pay the usual program fees for a period of 5 months. You don't have to pay a buyer's commission fees. But if you do, in exchange for this, you have to remain on the program until March of 2020.
Okay. Where does it say you have to remain on the program?
In the commission agreement.
In the commission agreement. Okay.
Yep. It specifically states they agree to remain on the program until that time, in the context of these freebies that are given. Okay. And this is specific language, obviously, specific to this transaction. It's talking about specific dollar amounts, specific time frame. These are specific provisions in the commission agreement tailored to.
Is there anything in the agreement that says, and if you don't, then you have to repay XYZ?
No. But I don't think that a reasonable person reading this would understand that somebody could get these freebies, $5,000 free, not have to pay the usual program fees, and then just terminate the contract or leave and not have to pay and stay on the program, therefore paying the fees for that 1 year period, simply by saying, okay, I've taken the freebies, but we're done. So I don't think that's a reasonable reading of that provision. I also think
that if you read it that way, what meaning does the 3-day notice provision have?
The meaning is that they can depart ways, but it doesn't negate the obligation to pay the fees.
And in that same phrase, you had also the death of the agent,
right,
as a basis for termination. So had Mr. Aulis died, would his estate still have owed $990 for a month for the period of the agreement?
Well, let's hope the brokerage wouldn't have done that, but but that's an interesting question. I don't know. Again, you're talking about boilerplate language in the independent contractor agreement, which the specific language of the commission agreement, I think, would control over that boilerplate language, just like the Hands case that I cite. Your Honor, if I could reserve the balance of my time.
Sure. That'd be fine. Thank you, Mr. Ruge. Mr. Covey.
Go ahead. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Chris Covey, and I represent the appellee and cross-appellant in this matter, Doyle Aulis. I'm not going to go through the facts. I think going second is the advantage of jumping right into the meat of it. I'll start with the first argument, which is that the independent operating agreement somehow is just additional terms to add on top of the CBS Home agreement. That is clearly an argument that was manufactured to meet this case. I think if you were to actually ask management at Ambassador, say, are all of your old contracts still in effect, and then you just add these provisions, they would say, of course not. It's a merger. CBS Home is no more. We end up with all these new agreements, and as the district court properly concluded, those are what govern the relationships between the parties. There's different insurance provisions between the two. There's an arbitration provision in CBS Home. So there's no way to read those together. They're clearly trying to pick and choose things because they want to charge their 990, but they didn't have a way to do it, so they kept it from his commissions, which they could do under the old agreement. So with respect to that agreement, or I'm sorry, with respect to that argument, it's simply untenable, and the only reasonable reading of this is that the new agreement, new company, all the brokers went into this new arrangement. The second argument raised by Mr. Ruge is that somehow the commission part of the independent operating agreement somehow survives termination. And he even said those two have to be read together. He's not arguing that they're two different things. The charges under the commission agreement are against commissions. Commissions are earned by brokers who are employed by the brokerage house. When that termination happens, there's no more commissions to be coming in. So there's no reason for them to pay these monthly fees for office space and the things when they are prohibited from working for this company anymore. So there's two ways they could have fixed this. Better drafting all around. One, they could have had some type of clawback provision, as you suggest, Your Honor, where if you terminate within 3 months, you owe this, 6 months, you owe this. They could have clearly said, we're bringing in these provisions from this old agreement, or better yet, redraft them if that was part of the new deal. If they wanted to have a clawback or a hold on commissions, they could have put that into this agreement. They chose not to. Their agreement, there's no evidence this was negotiated. So with respect to that, Your Honor, I think the district court got it right, and it's clearly just a situation where it almost, the whole thing almost appears spiteful for an agent who's leaving the entity after just a short period of time. So I'm going to jump into the cross appeal. The district court judge just ignored the marketing fee. There's evidence in the affidavit of my client that they withheld $1,900 and called it a technology marketing fee.
Is that term included anywhere in the agreements? Where's those come from?
It is not. I was just about to say, and those words don't appear anywhere in the agreements. The only place they appear is in my client's affidavit saying they withheld this money from me. And the district court just, I don't know what the judge was thinking, but it's just not in there. That wasn't disputed. There was no argument that there was a reason for that. There's nothing in Mr. Vogt's affidavit, he's from Ambassador, suggesting that we didn't withhold that or here's why. So we think that's mostly a Scrivener's error that we'd ask the court to correct. And then finally, we've got prejudgment interest, which you're hearing a lot about these days in the last 2 years. We think this falls squarely within the statute as recently interpreted by the Nebraska Supreme Court, and we would ask that this matter be remanded with instructions to affirm the liability ruling on summary judgment, but to instruct the district court to recalculate and enter an order.
So I'm going to go over to your first point, the marketing fee. So is it your position that you actually had $13,000 in commissions that you were entitled to, and that they withheld the $13,000, $11,000 against the $990 for 12 months, plus something that they called the marketing fee, but you should have been entitled to the $13,000 in commissions?
Yeah, so the $11,880 was the 12 months of the $990 marketing
fee.
Right. And then there was an additional $1,900, which gets me my $13,700. So they withheld a total amount of $13,700.
So you should have had $13,700 in commissions owed and...
Yes.
Okay. And then on the prejudgment interest, the contract provides that you're entitled to commissions within three days of Ambassador collecting them, correct?
Yes.
Is there anything in there that establishes when it was collected as it relates to the $13,000 that you're claiming? How do we know that? When is the start date for prejudgment interest here?
The record does not contain the answer to your first part of that question, which is what is 3 days after the commissions were earned or collected?
Collected.
We would ask that the court enter the judgment as of December 28th of 18, which is the demand date that we made, and that's included in the in the record. I don't have a citation to it, but it's a letter from an attorney named David Beasley who made a demand on December 28th. Failing that, Your Honors, if the court were to remand for further proceedings on those dates, we could certainly comply with that. But to the dollars involved in the legal fees, we'd have to address that.
The demand date is in there? Is in the record somewhere?
I'm sorry, the what is?
The demand date?
Yes, the demand is in the record.
Does the demand indicate that those commissions had already been received by Ambassador?
It does not. In fact, it indicates that they will be received in the future.
So if the contract provides that they should be submitted 3 days after collection, but we don't know when they were collected, how do we determine prejudgment interest?
On this record, Your Honor, you could not.
Is it an option to look at the date of the complaint? Way versus Scotch, the Supreme Court looked at the date of the complaint, but is that are the facts of our case different enough from Way versus Scotch that that would be a problem?
Well, no, I think the date of the complaint would work because the, you know what, Your Honor, as I stand here, I don't want to say that that would be accurate without having all the dates in front of me. I'm fairly certain that all of the commissions were collected and unpaid by the date of the complaint, but I can't represent that.
Can't
in court.
Say that, that's for sure. Okay.
See, I still have some time remaining, but I'm more than happy to yield to the Right and Honorable Senator from Lincoln. And I appreciate the court's time. We would ask that the liability portion be affirmed and that it be remanded for further direction on the amount of the judgment. Thank you.
Right. Thank you,
Mr. Kirby. Mr. Ruggie, how much time does Mr. Ruggie have?
53 seconds, Your Honor.
All right.
I'll be brief. With regard to the marketing fee, I think there is a factual dispute here. Again, I'm sensitive to Mr. Covey's comments about the dollars involved in remanding, but there is a factual dispute there because Scott Vogt's affidavit states that they withheld $11,880 and paid the rest of the commissions. So to the extent that they're alleging that more dollars were withheld, there is a factual dispute there.
Is there anything in the documents that provide or allow Ambassador to withhold a marketing and technology fee?
I don't know. I can't say for sure.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ruggie. The case will be taken under submission. Thank you for your arguments, counsel. You are excused.